Welcome to the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. If your job involves working with or influencing people's behavior, this podcast offers invaluable insights into what makes people tick. Through personal interviews that are thoughtful and surprising, we explore the full range of the roots to people smarts that can help you make or break your own career. My name is Marie Gervais, and with a PhD in culture and learning in the workplace and my own cultural journey, I bring the mysteries of human beings at work around the world to you. Through conversations with very diverse people, examining the groups they were born into and the ones they chose to belong to, my podcast takes a deep dive into why people do what they do and how they belong. Hone your skills to manage others and to be a better human being at work with the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. And now for today's episode. Hello, Culture and Leadership Connections podcast listeners. Today, I have a most wonderful guest to introduce to you. Her name is Amber Ontiveros. She is a longtime civil rights advocate who served in advisory roles at the U.S. Department of Transportation for both the Bush and the Obama administrations, and now runs Ontiveros and Associates, specializing in change management, policy development, and executive coaching. She has spent her entire working life in policy in the political realm and had a very interesting transformative spiritual experience that has sent her on a consciousness and mindfulness journey that she will share with us today during the interview. Amber is the author of Heal the Four Woundings, A Guide to End Discord and Discrimination, which I'm most excited to read. Welcome, Amber.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you for taking the time to be here. So please tell the audience a little bit about you. You must have been born somewhere. You must come from some sort of a family background. So give us a little start.
So I grew up on a farm in Arizona, and I'm Latina. And eventually I managed to go to college. I did not grow up wealthy. I grew up poor and accidentally went to college. And the book that you talked about earlier, it starts with my background. So your listeners are probably thinking, oh, Amber, she has this background. She worked for two presidential administrations. She must be living the high life. And this book is a very deeply personal book. And it's as a result of my past. And what happened is I had a near-death experience, Marie. Mm-hmm. I have a rare disease, and one day I was in my bed, and then the next minute I had a seizure, and I was floating through the ceiling, and I went into this expanse of blackness, and the next thing I know, there was a pinprick of light, and it called me. It sucked me into this light, and I was in this infinite light with a being of light that I call the infinite creator. And it was so beautiful and it was so profound. And what I realized as I came back was that I had experienced those times when I had helped people, and I experienced times when I'd also hurt them. So what I did was I studied the neuroscience of unconscious bias, and I discovered something shocking. And it was shocking because I'm an expert in discrimination. And I realized that the oppression exists because of the way our mind works. So what I discovered were there are these two biases. One is called the self-serving bias, and I'll explain it to you and how another part of your brain is holding you hostage. So the self-serving bias works like this. If good things happen to you, you attribute it to yourself. If bad things happen to you, you attribute it to things outside of yourself. And so the neuroscientists say that in order to address bias, you have to slow the mind down.
Yeah.
So then there's this other bias. It's called the mini-me bias. Essentially, the way that works is I tend to like and select people that are like me. Well, why is that happening? Again, this is an evolutionary protective mechanism in the brain that is basically taking information And it's quickly applying the past onto a new experience. And it's the same thing with the self-serving bias. In both of those examples, we're not assessing reality in how it really is. And then on top of that, there's a part of your brain called the reticular activation system. We have all done this where we drove to work and we can't remember how we got there. That is the reticular activation system. And what it's doing is it's holding you hostage and it's filtering out only those things that you believe about yourself.
And the world.
And the world. And so I call the book Heal the Four Woundings because those four woundings exist within all of us. So the tool that I was using is called mindful listening. And you can try this while I'm explaining it. So what you do in the middle of a difficult meeting, you focus on the tip of your nose. You think in as you're breathing in. You think out as you're breathing out. This helps you calm and regulate your emotions. And you ask yourself a set of questions about why are you angry? What are your beliefs in that moment for why you're getting upset? And why is the other person behaving badly? And I was doing this while I was watching a man who was so mad over Black Lives Matter. This is what enabled me to understand the four woundings. Because what's happening to the man that is angry over Black Lives Matter is the same thing that was happening with me. See, they would hire me, my clients, to create the best, most innovative minority contracting programs, programs for women, and I would create them. And then I would get crickets. And I began to wonder, is there something wrong with me? So as I was using this technique, I realized the man that was angry over Black Lives Matter has the same oppressive beliefs that I do, and they're from past woundings that we are then applying to the new situation.
Right. We're re-traumatizing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the four woundings are, I am not enough. I am not worthy. I have to win, and I don't have enough.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Amber, I want to backtrack a little bit because this is all really wonderful and interesting information, and I'm glad you started with it. But I'd like to know a little bit more about some personal incidents that you can recall from your childhood and from your adolescence that would have oriented you towards where you are right now so that we can connect with you more personally. People often talk in generalities when I first speak to them, or they speak about the things they've discovered. But I want to know what that's grounded in. It's grounded in some kind of personal experience. It can be a positive childhood memory, or it can be one that's not so positive, or it can just be something that stands out in your mind and you don't know why. Like, for example, I have this very strong visual memory of myself in the snow, looking up at the falling snow. And it was when I was less than 2 years old, and my mother was taking me in the sled to the grocery store to pick up some groceries. But I fell off the sled, but the snow was soft and I was in a snowsuit, so I was just lying there. And for some reason, it's a really strong memory. And I remember her picking me up and saying, oh, good thing I found you, and then putting me back in the sled. It has no emotional impact, but it's a strong memory. And when I think back on it, I think it affects the way I see life. I'm always looking up to see what's the big picture and wondering if the experience that I'm experiencing right now connects to something else. So it may be something like that, or maybe something else that is more on the positive or negative side. What comes to mind when you hear these things?
Honestly, I don't have an answer to what resulted in who I am today.
But you might have a memory. You don't have to have an answer to how it affected you, but what's the memory?
Well, the person that helped me edit my book asked me this very question. And the only memory I could think of was when I was a little kid, there was paper in our chicken coop, and I was playing with it like I was an administrator. So somehow in my DNA, I've always been interested in management.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's great. What about when you got older and you're an adolescent or a young adult? What's a memory from that time?
The only thing I can think of is I had a really wonderful high school teacher. I took his class in moot court, and I was really interested in law. And all of the work that I've ever done has been in law. I mean, I've written federal law, even though I'm not an attorney. So I definitely think that my teacher shaped me.
Mm. What was the impetus in that shaping? What was the teacher like? Or was it the subject matter that really attracted you?
It was the subject matter. Mm-hmm. The moot court or mock court is very similar to all my personality characteristics. You know, it's public speaking, it's analyzing situations, it's constructing an argument, it's posing solutions. So those were all the things that I found really interesting about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, what about family? Did you have brothers and sisters? Were both your parents in your life?
Yes, both of my parents were in my life. My mother died when I was fairly young, and I do have one brother.
I see. And then the area that you were born into, because people are born into a group, they're not into a culture, they're not just born into a void. So where your farm was located, it could be the farming culture. You know, families also have cultures just within their small groups. And they can also be the political culture, the religious culture, whatever is around you that you're born into has some kind of an effect on you. Either people move towards it or they move away from it. And so can you think of some effects of the groups you were born into when you were younger?
So I know that I moved away from the group that I was born into. So again, I'm Mexican. I grew up in Arizona and I grew up poor. And, you know, I'm the first person to go to college, first person to go to graduate school. That's why it's difficult for me to answer these questions, because many people presuppose they know where they're going. And when you don't have any people around you that have education, you don't know what your options are. And that was me. I had no idea where I could go. So when I went and got into Lewis and Clark, they told me I could have gone to really amazing colleges, because even though I ended up going to a junior college and then eventually to Lewis and Clark, I had a really high GPA because I was really smart, but I didn't know what my options were. And so therefore, I just did what I could do.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe I would characterize that as not being aware of what was around you, either options wise or being able to synchronize and analyze and synthesize the information that was around you culturally. Could also be looking for a way out because you were unhappy with the situations that you were born into.
Yes, I would say that is all true. And the other thing I talk about in the book is that I had been raped many times when I was younger. So my background is one of oppression.
Yes.
I had to leave that oppressive world so that I could then find tools so that I could then eventually heal myself. So the fact that I then went on to work for the administrations and did all these really cool things, I'm actually pretty proud of, considering the difficult traumas that I had to overcome in order to get there.
Mm-hmm. Because from great crisis can emerge great victory.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So as you grew up and you started to choose the people and the groups around you actively, where did you choose to belong? Where did you choose to invest your time and energy in relationship building?
So I chose to invest in civil rights. I was lucky in that when I moved here to go to college, one of the very first positions that I found was I had worked on a political campaign and they really loved me. And a Black senator recruited me literally during my mother's wake. And they called me and asked me to come work for her. So I ended up working as a lobbyist, then worked in the legislature for multiple sessions. Then I worked for a lobby firm. Then I worked for the head of the transit agency as their policy advisor. And then I moved to DC.
Hmm. An attraction to political culture, an attraction to the culture of policy?
The attraction for me is really policy and in the policy areas that I have always been interested in are around issues that affect people. And when you understand the policy mechanisms that help people of color and women, they're all economic. And so the areas that I've always focused on when I worked at the Department of Transportation were around several federal civil rights laws that create economic opportunities for women and people of color to get contracts in construction jobs, as well as other professional services contracts through transit agencies or state departments of transportation or cities.
So helping to relieve the effects of marginalization and culture and injustice and racism and all of the things that people become marginalized for through policy that would help improve economic outcomes for people.
That's right.
And that was something that you were drawn to.
Yes.
And it was also liberating for you.
Yes. Yes, of course. Yeah.
It helps you to give back and to see yourself in a much larger context and see that the role that you play is as being so significant, I would think. I'm just guessing.
Yes.
So what about temperament and personality? Temperament being, people would say, oh yeah, since she was young, she's always been very focused, or she's always been very quiet or very gregarious or whatever. You know, this temperament. And it's also affected by the social context in which you live. But then there's personality, which you add on to later. So you grow on, you overcome obstacles, you create opportunities, you miss opportunities, and you miss overcoming obstacles, and all of that helps to form who you are. So what would you say is your temperament, and what would you say you've added on to personality-wise?
Right. That's a really interesting question. So in terms of my temperament, I honestly can say I love me now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very Latin, therefore I'm very direct. I tend to be very honest, and I can be very fiery. That's the Latin in me.
Mm-hmm.
The latter question that you asked was, what did I add on to my personality? So the thing that I learned, and I only have learned this after my near-death experience, is even though I seem successful, I was very unhappy. So my temperament, yes, I'm really smart. Yes, I'm fiery. But what is actually happening within me is that I was unhappy, I was self-loathing, and I was bullying myself. And now what I have learned how to do is to accept my feelings, love my feelings, and through these techniques, change the thought patterns that I have about myself to understand that all of those characteristics, including the fiery aspect of me and including the anger, are all some of the best attributes of me.
That's how you fight against injustice.
That's right.
That's great. I love your answer to that. So can you recall a time when you became aware that your understanding of the world was just what had surrounded you and it wasn't reality for everybody else? That can be a cultural disconnect, a social class disconnect. It can be moving from one place to another. It can be the time that you enter a law firm for the first time. There are lots of ways where you feel like, oh, wow, what I thought I knew about the world is not what everybody else knows. This is just one small segment.
So say your question again.
I'm looking for a moment of cognitive dissonance in culture when you think, wow, what I thought I knew about how the world works is really only my limited experience. So I can say, for example, when I was a kid, I was 5, I was invited to a birthday party. And the birthday party was an Italian family that had a pasta manufacturing plant that was attached to their house. And I had never had Italian food before. I'd never smelled Parmesan cheese before. And when I walked into the birthday party, I suddenly realized that everybody was speaking Italian, that I didn't understand what was going on. And the smell of the food was foreign to me, and I got scared and I ran out. I would say that was my first sense that everybody doesn't eat the same food. Everybody doesn't do the same things. So that was one moment of cultural disconnect. I also had a social class disconnect when I went to France and visited my husband's aristocratic relatives, and they had maids and they'd ring bells for their maids to come. And I was in complete shock. And I thought, wow, this is a reality I have never experienced, and I don't think I want to. It was just a complete sense of disconnect, right? So those are just a couple, but it can be in many, many circumstances when you just feel like, wow, what I think I knew everybody did is not what everybody does.
So I definitely had the experience of Christmas time. For my culture, we make tamales and menudo and pozole, et cetera, during Christmas. But it's new to me that most Americans do not like pig's feet or cow's stomach, which is a delicacy for some Asian cultures, and it's one of the best foods ever. But that's part of my culture. And, you know, most people think of cow tripe, which is cow stomach, and they go, ooh, when in actuality, it's delicious. Or lingua tacos. For all the women out there that want to make some amazing tacos, take a large cow tongue, put it in the crock pot, peel the outside of it, and then fry it, and you will literally have the best tacos of your life.
That's wonderful. So what brings up the best in you when somebody hires you for policy or they hire you to work with their company for change management? What environment brings out the best in you so you can truly be yourself?
Understanding what is the end goal, the desire that they're trying to achieve, and when they're trying to achieve it, what are the barriers that they think exist? And then typically, I usually like to go in and do assessments of individual divisions so that I can find out what are the real problems underneath the rocks. Because we do change management around equity, in which case, from my experience, it's almost always the case that a department will have an issue with equity, and it will usually be a white male only group. And the reason why it's coming up is because the agency did not pay attention to them when they should have. And therefore, they're usually the first group that I want to find out what, how have they been treated? Why were they treated in the way that they were treated? And then how can we resolve it? Because diversity, equity, and inclusion is not simply about people of color. It's about inclusion of all people. And it's about changing the organization to bring innovations to the entire employment team.
And so what would bring out the best in you is people being open to tell you more things that you can use? Or is it in a spirit of investigation? Like, what kinds of qualities bring out the best in you in an organization?
So typically, it's an organization that is clear and is authentic. And honestly, I've been doing this for so long that most organizations don't know how to do what I'm doing. So I bring the aspect that I need because most organizations don't know how to do what I'm suggesting. So what I do is I am vulnerable for my clients to allow my clients to be vulnerable in turn.
So I see.
Mm-hmm. The question you asked was, what is it that I need that the clients need to be? No. That's not how I approach it. I embody the attributes that the clients should comprise so that then they can embody it themselves.
Mm-hmm. I was more interested in the context rather than saying, well, the client needs to have this or you need to have that. It's just what brings out the best. For some people, it's that they need to have the feeling that there is going to be openness. Other people, it's more that they need to have the documents in advance. You know, it varies from person to person. But I like your answer about saying that you bring what you need and that you want to embody into the organization.
Well, let me give you a very specific example, Marie. So I had a client that I was working with for, I don't know, probably 2 years, and we finished developing this policy. And then at the last minute, they decided that they needed to change it. And they needed to change it because they themselves were doing a new change management initiative that would have affected the policies that we were proposing to implement. And so what happened was they rewrote our entire policy document. And so I sat down and explained to them in a vulnerable way why I know why they're uncomfortable with the document. So it wasn't simply that they were uncomfortable with the document because there was a mismatch in our policy proposals and some of the changes. It had to do with the tone of the language. And so they were rewriting the document for it to be comfortable for themselves to understand it. Mm-hmm. And so I talked to my client about that. And I said, you know, I understand that the language is making you uncomfortable. And you may be rewriting it so that you can understand it for you. But isn't it the case that you're writing this document for you to communicate with me, not with yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And through that conversation of me being vulnerable and taking a non-judgmental, loving, kind approach with my clients, I never judge them. I allow them to be exactly where they are because we all are in a path for growth on this topic. That's what enables them to come to the table to change.
Mm-hmm. So we're reaching the end of the interview, and this is your soapbox moment. What would you like to promote?
I guess I would say this. If there are any executives, if there are any CEOs, if there are any individuals listening to this podcast that are unhappy, that you need better tools to manage your emotions, if you ever feel like you're stuck in a thought play loop, if you're worried about you're struggling from imposter syndrome, all of these things could affect your ability to assess and manage risk. That can affect profitability and it can affect the allocation of resources. And what I have tried to do, not only in the book, but I also then have created an executive coaching program that we're teaching other minority entrepreneurs and executive women, is we're teaching them using a variety of mindset tools, how to change and overcome imposter syndrome and tools to better manage and regulate their emotions. So if they're interested, check out my website at healthefourwoundings.com.
Awesome. And since that's also the name of your book, that will help people to find the book too.
Yes.
Excellent. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Nope, that's it.
Well, it's been lovely to hear your point of view, your story, and the tools that you have to help people regulate and make changes that are going to lead to a more just and equitable world.
Yes.
Thank you, Amber.
Thank you.
Amber Ontiveros rose from a traumatic childhood to the position of policy writer and law writer for several state and federal departments. There she made her first inroads to transforming society towards justice and equity through policy in the political realm. Her laser focus on what interested her and the fiery Latina temperament that fueled her work for justice brought her to a high-level policy writing position and to change management. The most significant event she had was a near-death experience when she realized how much she was truly loved and began the journey towards her rightful place in society as someone who was no longer controlled by self-loathing. Take a look at Amber's website, healthefourwoundings.com, to see her smiling, radiant face, and, of course, to find out how you can begin your own inner healing process using her strategies and processes. If you were intrigued by this episode, you know what to do. Share it! Our listenership grows from audience sharing. Just send the link from whatever device you are using to a friend and ask them what they think of the episode. While you're at it, click on the shiftworkplace.com/podcast link and scroll down to the middle of the page to leave your personal message about what moved you in that episode. You may even be inspired to make a one-time or monthly cash donation to show your support of the show. Thank you so much for listening, and may culture and leadership connections continue to guide and inspire your day.